What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hi, hello, everybody. Welcome to 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I am your host, Ray Harkins, hanging out on this beautiful, beautiful day in Southern California. And I have a director of a feature-length film on the episode this day. This day being Wednesday. Hopefully you're downloading on Wednesday, because you need to go to the Regent Theater in downtown Los Angeles on Wednesday, the 20th, because The Icarus Line Must Die is a film that I've watched. You, if you have any sort of affiliation with independent music, you will enjoy it. And especially if you know the band The Icarus Line, and even if you don't, you will like this film. So go to the Regent Theater tonight and you will be able to see the premiere of this thing. But let's put this in context, right? I'm just like throwing dates out at you and stuff like that. But so Michael Grodner, he is the director of this film, The Icarus Line Must Die. And I actually worked with him a long time ago on a music video for the band Planes Mistaken for Stars when I was working at Century Media. And I just thought he was a awesome guy, just super professional. We were able to get this video done very efficiently and cheaply, and it was awesome. Like, it was just a very thematic video. They had a lot of great stuff going on in the video, just stuff that I was like, oh, wow, like, this is a great treatment. And yeah, so when this came across my desk, I was like, I would love to have Michael on. So hold on, let's get some other things that are top of mind into your mind so you do this. And that thing that you need to do is buy band merch, right? I still love buying merch from bands. I have so many shirts, and I love that because, I mean, fortunately, I get to work in a position where I can wear a different band shirt every day, and that is my work uniform. And Rockabilia. That is what I'm trying to tell you. Rockabilia is the place to purchase merch from every band you could possibly imagine. They have 500,000 items, everything from long sleeves to sweatshirts to hats, you name it, they got it. And I will give you 15% off by using the code PCJabberjaw. PCJabberjaw will get you 15% off, and they have so much merch. It's officially licensed. That was words being in my mouth. It's officially licensed. And that means the band gets paid and you have nothing to worry about as far as the quality is concerned. It's awesome. I love what they do and you need to support them. PC Jabberjaw, 15% off. Thank you, Rockabilia. We love that. Rockabilia.com, that, obviously. I mean, if you don't know that, you can probably just Google Rockabilia and you'll be able to find it. But so like I said, The Icarus Line Must Die. is a feature-length film, and it is based around the band, The Icarus Line. There is elements of truth to it, but it's, you know, essentially a film based around fiction with actual people who are the, you know, band members. So Joe, the vocalist of The Icarus Line, is, you know, the starring role, as it were. But like I said, it's playing at the Regent Theater tonight. And it also has a couple week stint at the Royal Theater in West Los Angeles. And then on July 10th, it is hitting video on demand. And I really, really recommend it because it's this interesting mixture of, you know, like punk filmmaking. But then it also has a lot of sort of Jim Jarmusch just really spending time with the characters. And you don't really feel like you're in a movie per se. You're just basically existing in this universe and hanging out. And I found it to be really compelling because, like I said, if you've ever known of the band or you've ever spent time in Los Angeles, so much of this film will be right up your alley. And even if you haven't, you will still find so much to enjoy about this. So anyways, and then I just thought Michael was a very interesting person living in the Hollywood industry, but then also having a large affinity for independent music. And I've never had a person that is a director from, you know, making music videos. So a lot of stuff came together about this. Anyways, enough of me. And here is Michael and my conversation. Okay, I'll talk to you after the episode is over. That I had to you, which was obviously our work together with Planes Mistaken for Stars, and you know, you doing the music video for them. And you know, a lot of my job then was obviously to kind of figure out people to, you know, work with, because it was a weird time when the music industry was changing, where, you know, music videos were still important, but as you have noted, that, you know, budgets just didn't exist, where it was like, hey, can you do this for like $3? And directors are like, I can try, but I don't know how this will work. But then I always respected the fact that it was like the, you know, the people that I work with, such as yourself and, you know, a few others that stuck out in my head, that you were down to do it on a shoestring budget, but you also put a lot of, you know, your own artistic effort into it. Whereas, you know, sometimes you work with people that you kind of get what you pay for, you know? But you definitely did not have that, experience in my eyes. But the, it seemed to me, you know, obviously you've always been drawn to film and working in the visual medium, but you know, when you were working with these bands and doing the music videos, it seems like you really had to care about it. And I know that's kind of a basic statement, but like it seems to kind of come through. I presume that's kind of the approach that you had in all these music videos. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, I think I've done maybe about 15 music videos. So it's not like I've done 100 where it's sort of like, you know, I'm just kind of on a conveyor belt, you know. And so every one I did, you know, I treated in a very precious way and, you know, put a lot of, you know, heart and soul into it because, I love doing it and I really enjoyed it and loved the music and that kind of, you know, convergence in a sense of music and film. So, you know, there's that. But, you know, I think anything I do, you know, that I'm going to put out there for people to see, I just definitely want to put my all into.
Oh, totally. I mean, it makes sense. But I guess to a certain extent too, where yes, like, you know, you can use these music videos as calling cards for your resume and everything like that. And yeah, last thing you want to do is put forth a, you know, inferior product, so to speak. But, I just always noticed, like with the particular bands that you worked with as well, where there was always this real, I guess, artistic slant to them. Because, you know, you could do the proverbial, hey, let's put a band in a warehouse and have them play their song and like, that's it. You know, there's nothing, maybe there's a little narrative, you know, but all the videos that you approached they're very thematic and had a lot of stuff going on rather than just the traditional, let's watch a band play live.
Well, yeah, again, also it's, yeah, what videos do I want to see? And I do feel like a lot of the performance videos that you do see, you know, I think you get bored after about 30 seconds of a performance video, unless it's just an amazing song, an amazing performance. So I think you need to give the viewer more than that. And I think it ties into the film, The Icarus Lion Must Die, that I feel a lot of the time, in addition to really cool imagery, you know, if you do have a video for, you know, 3 minute song or more longer, you need to keep the audience's attention. And I think a storyline does that. You know, if you have a beginning and a middle and end, you want to stick around to see what happens at the end. So that was my thought a lot of the times with these videos.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you want to keep people, you know, hooked for lack of a better term, or interested in the in what is unfolding. And, you know, it'll serve two purposes. It'll be entertaining, and then it'll also introduce people to hopefully, you know, a cool song and a cool band.
Yeah, and also, I guess the time we were doing it too, which was probably around at least 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, you know, videos are somewhat disposable for people. You know, you can just click on and see something and then continue clicking, you know, so you want them to stick around for a while.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean that, and I think that was where that sort of transitionary phase existed, where, you know, MTV had less of the stranglehold, where, you know, not only were they playing fewer and fewer music videos, but, you know, the sort of edgier independent stuff just didn't have a place until, you know, streaming started to be a, you know, incredibly important component, not only of the consumption of music, but the consumption of music videos. But it was that fallow era of, like, you know, 2000, whatever, 4 to 2008 or 9, before, and it's not like the budgets crept back up, but people were just like, who's even watching music videos? Are these relevant anymore? You know?
Right. And it's funny, I do still get that today. I mean, I'm still interested in working with bands on music videos, but, and then sometimes I get from the label like, well, you know, nobody's really watching. I don't watch videos anymore. That's what I get some comments from, say, label heads. But you go on YouTube and you see, you know, some of these videos get a ridiculous amount of, you know, people watching it. So I think there's still an audience there, maybe more than ever.
I really agree. I think it's almost just as important to do a visual component as when you're picking out, you know, the first song you're going to release on the internet to people. You know, it's like those are hand in hand. They need to be, you know, in sync with one another in order for people that are, you know, like you said, just kind of clicking around, trying to find new stuff to be exposed to. You got to have some interesting visual presence, because, yeah, otherwise you're just, you know, you're completely missing an entire platform, you know?
Right, right. I mean, you know, that's where people, you know, you immediately go to YouTube when you hear of a band, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, kind of putting the spotlight on you as a person, you were not born and raised in LA, correct?
No, I'm from Queens, New York. So I born in Queens, New York, and lived there, you know, till I was 17. Then I came out to LA. I went to film school at USC, and that's kept me here. And I've stayed here ever since. So, yeah, I'm originally a New Yorker.
Sure, sure. Right. You have the, a little of your accent creeps out occasionally, just occasionally.
Right. Yeah, when I start drinking, it really comes out. So
that's amazing.
Any moment now, we'll start here.
That's perfect. I should note that we're doing this before noon. So, but the, you know, your trajectory in regards to the fact that you have always been interested in, you know, independent minded music and stuff like that, and especially obviously with your, you know, the film you're putting out, you know, where did kind of independent music start to infiltrate your life? I mean, you know, clearly being raised in New York City had a large cultural impact, but, you know, when did that stuff start to creep into your life?
Well, I guess for me, like, as a kid, I mean, a very little kid, the first band that made an impression on me in a big way, or I want to say maybe the first show I ever saw, was Kiss. And because in a way that also, I was, you know, always into film, and I was always into horror films. And then Kiss came along, and you had, you know, horror films and music together, which was like, you know, the best thing in the world for me as an 11-year-old kid. But I guess when I, you know, I've always been into interesting music, stuff that's off the beaten path and, you know, not necessarily the, you know, the popular stuff. And, you know, as far as punk or indie music, I always loved guitar music and whether it's, you know, Ramones or The Clash or more obscure stuff. And, but when I remember coming out to LA, the three bands, I just remember these three bands that really had an impact on me. And this is when things kind of changed, was Husker Du, Replacements and the Minutemen. Mm-hmm. And I remember those records, came out around that time that kind of changed everything for me in a sense, music wise. And, I mean, I have a wide taste in music, but, the cool thing is it's like, you know, over the years, as things turns in terms of my career or things that I do, now I'm, you know, I put on shows with Mike Watt of the Minutemen and we shoot, you know, we've shot interviews with him. So it's kind of a nice thing that kind of comes full circle in a way.
Totally. Because then these people that you either looked up to or just respected their artistic output, now you can be kind of, you know, peers in the same level where you're just like, even though you yourself will never, you know, kind of put yourself in the same league as these people because you looked up to their music so much or whatever, but you're like, oh yeah, like we're kind of doing, you know, like different things, but they're all kind of related in this weird, you know, punk rock world. And yeah, that's cool when you can kind of have that level playing field in a way.
Well, totally. It's like, well, you know, it's, I mean, I'm sure you have the same exact experience, but it's like, for instance, Cursive, the band Cursive, I was listening to them when they were putting out their, you know, earliest records as a fan. And then when I started doing music videos, I think I reached out to them, or I think that's how it worked out. But I, you know, ended up doing two music videos with them. And now, I mean, I just saw Tim from Cursive the other day. We were just chatting about, he also is directing films, so we had a kind of common bond there. But it's always nice when you know you're fans of a band, and the next thing you know, you're working with them and hanging out with them, having a beer with them, you know?
Yeah, no, that's really cool. Especially too, where you always see, you know, the intersection of people that get interested in subcultures, whether, like you mentioned, you know, you being into horror movies when you were younger, and then, you know, it kind of almost predisposes you from getting into, you know, weird subcultures in other facets of art, you know, whether it's like music or, you know, like, you know, actual art, as far as, well, I say actual, like, you know, paintings and stuff like that, because it's all art. But you, and then you see people, like you mentioned Tim, where, you know, he clearly was very successful as far as a musician is concerned, but then, you know, his interest and passion start to develop where he's like, yeah, I want to do film and more of that stuff. And, you know, how they all kind of co-mingle.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, you know, but I guess we all have that side to us. I guess what you were saying is that sort of subculture of, say, horror films and getting deeply into that. And then the kind of the subculture of getting into, say, SST bands. It's, you know, you just have this predilection for getting into things that just aren't, you know, maybe right in front of you, maybe not in the mainstream. And it extends to different, you know, art types of art.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the common trait that I see amongst, you know, getting into that sort of stuff too, is just the obsessive nature of it. Because, you know, most whatever, you know, stereotypical sort of mainstream art, whether it's, you know, movies, you know, music, all that sort of stuff, you know, it's meant to be a very sort of transactional relationship where it's like, okay, I see the thing and then I leave the theater and then like, that's all, you know, I don't really contemplate it much beyond the actual experience. But, you know, these subcultures that we've been involved in, when you dive in, you go like, you know, neck deep into it. You're obsessed with it. You're trying to figure out all of the, like, okay, Mike Watt has done all of these records, and then he's also played with these other bands, and like, you get obsessive. And I think it, you know, in the same way that you could be obsessive about, like, oh my gosh, I need to see every Dario Argento movie made, you know? And then you start to collect this weird pastiche of obsessions, and it is interesting how it fleshes itself out like that.
Yeah, and the thing is, it never ends. You know, you keep...
That's true.
I'm still doing it, you know, still up until 2 a.m, you know, watching, you know, the Monty Hellman canon of films. So he did a movie called Tulane Blacktop, and I've been just kind of obsessing over these Westerns he did in the middle 60s. But anyhow,
yeah.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
No, but still, but like, I do think that, I mean, you hit on a really key component that I think a lot of people run into, you know, as they get older and as obligations start to seep into their lives from, you know, either a professional or, you know, they have families, and like your time becomes more, of a commodity because, you know, there's less of it to go around. A lot of people, you know, kind of, they turn away from the whether it's obsessive nature or they just don't find the time to be able to, you know, do these things. And I think that's when or be excited about, you know, uncovering new bands or directors or whatever. It just kind of runs into a wall, and then, you know, people kind of like leave it to the side, which, you know, that's fine if that's what you're into, but I think you got to keep trying, you know.
Yeah, I haven't found that. I haven't found that where I, you know, it's just part of my nature, I think, that I'm interested in finding out new stuff and find and delving deep into that. I mean, I like a sense of history and still uncovering a lot of music that I really didn't listen to. But, you know, now I think you have a it's you have a little easier road. Like if you go on Spotify and you can pop up, you know, Suicide or something like that, and like maybe something that kind of wasn't on your radar 10 years ago or 20 years ago, you know, it's a little easier, which is pretty cool.
Totally. I mean, there's definitely no, I mean, there's late, the feeling of being late to the party, you know, still exists, but you know, you, like you said, you can, of course you can't transport back in time and see, you know, Suicide perform in New York City, but you can contextually dive into an artist and understand where they're coming from and still have it impact you in a major way, even though, you know, they haven't existed for 30 plus years. And you're like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so glad I found this now.
Right. And also, for better or worse, you still have a lot of these bands getting back together, doing reunion tours, maybe more now than ever, but maybe they were always doing these kind of oldies tours, you know, like if you didn't see the Pixies back in the day, you're going to be able to see them pretty much every year for the next who knows how long.
Totally. And especially too, like you always have those conversations of the, you know, the Holy Grail bands where it's just like, oh yeah, of course you're never going to be able to say this band. And then it's like, you know, almost every single corner, like as long as the, you know, seminal or founding band members are alive, you're probably going to be able to see them.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. When I was younger, like in junior high school, I used to be into the band Yes. And then slowly I started getting back into them. And we went to go see them a couple of months ago. But it wasn't – but now there's two Yeses, right? There's Yes with John Anderson, and then there's Yestival. I think that's what it is. At least that's what I went to go see. I went to something called Yestival.
That's amazing. I had no idea that split off into two things. That's amazing.
Yeah. So as you know, Steve Howe is on one band and John Anderson is another. And the Steve Howe band, you know, has a guy that's like a John Anderson sound alike. It's pretty good. And but you got Steve Howe, who's pretty, you know, ridiculously great.
Right.
So it was pretty solid. You know, obviously you want to see the whole band together, but.
Yeah, but yeah, you can't win them all. You can see, you know, as long as you're seeing a version of it that's like, okay, yeah, there's some members and they're sounding awesome, then I'm into it.
Right. Yeah. It's not quite Beatlemania, but it's kind of almost close. Like the bass player was big. It wasn't Chris Squire because he's dead, but they introduced him as the man that Chris Squire handpicked to play bass. So there's some connection, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
They didn't just throw a wig on a guy. Right.
Totally. So some dude they found at Guitar Center, like, hey, you're a shredder. How about you come play with us?
but I did see Emerson, Lake and Palmer too on that same show. But the only guy left is Palmer. Mm-hmm. So and both, I think the two other guys are dead. So they did have two guys who are like literally Guitar Center guys on either side of Carl Palmer.
Right. I guess there are stranger ways to make your living, you know?
Yeah, it seemed to be having a good time.
That's good.
Oh, I'm very excited to tell you about the sound of vinyl. It's no surprise that vinyl is a huge part of my life and many other people's because it sounds incredible, looks great, and it's fun to collect. The only problem is there's so much out there, but that is where the Sound of Vinyl comes in. Their mission is to help you build the perfect collection. They got a website where you can shop over 20,000 titles and an amazing recommendation service that can learn about your personal taste and offer personalized suggestions of records that you'll love. It works over text message. It's super simple. They'll text you an offer for an album, and if you want to buy it, all you have to do is reply yes. You can even text back to chat with a real live human who can help you find the perfect record. Plus, they got collectible, limited edition colored vinyl that you won't find anywhere else from artists like Weezer, Beach Boys, John Coltrane, Aerosmith, REM, Kiss, and so much more. Plus, there are no subscription fees and no commitments. Give it a try. Go to soundofvinyl.com/words and sign up for the text service to get $5 off your first record. Again, that is soundofvinyl.com/words for $5 off your first record. I cannot tell you how cool this service is. I've bought multiple records from there. I got the Smashing Pumpkins Siamese Dream reissue on double LP. It's beautiful. I got the Killers Hot Fuss record. Basically, this is the perfect service for people who are just starting their collection or people like myself who have over 1,000 copies. Well, not 1,000 copies, but 1,000 pieces of vinyl, and I'm trying to fill some holes. So soundofvinyl.com/words. I love this service, and so will you. Okay? Now on with the show.
And so kind of, you know, like, I mean, I've seen you mention in, you know, other interviews where you knew at a very, very early age that you were, you know, interested in filmmaking. And clearly, you know, your love for music that you kind of, you know, just laid out. You know, the principles in, you know, DIY filmmaking where, you know, you're not given a budget by a large studio, and the principles of, you know, being in a DIY, like, you know, punk, hardcore, rock, whatever you want to call it, band, are, you know, very, very similar. When did you kind of notice those two principles kind of like, you know, lining up with one another where you're like, oh, I see that they're both kind of similar?
I mean, it's one of these things where it's like, it's, you know, you have two choices. You either do something with very little or you just don't do it. And I'd rather do something, you know? So that's one aspect of it. But yeah, I've always loved things that are rough around the edges, and I've always strived for this kind of authenticity, which you hear in punk or indie and stuff that's maybe has this lo-fi aesthetic to it. And I think you can't get that authenticity. If you throw, you know, $20 million at something, you lose that authenticity. So, you know, while I think everybody who makes movies wants to, you know, wants the budget, wants it's a lot easier to work with a budget and be able to use all the tools and the tricks and the gadgets. But, you know, if you're working with very little, what you do have in your back pocket is that authenticity, which, you know, you can't throw money at.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's no way that you could ever look at, you know, some of the early, you know, punk movies that were, you know, specifically focused, you know, whether it's Suburbia or, you know, Decline of Western Civilization. I mean, Decline is obviously a documentary, but there's no way that you could like throw money at that and make it better, you know?
It would be terrible.
No, it would be awful. Yeah.
In a weird way, there was that Martin Scorsese show on HBO,
Vinyl, yeah,
which was that case, you know.
Totally, that's a true point.
Which was, I mean, for me, it was not my thing, and I'm a huge Scorsese fan, and I just did not go for it. It just read so false to me, and it, you know, here's a movie that should be right in my wheelhouse and probably your wheelhouse, but or a show,
yeah.
And it was just so fakey, you know, just so fake. So, there's a case where money does not help.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. It's like a movie that came out, I want to say it was either maybe 2 years ago, Green Room, or as A24 put it out. And it was a very, very accurate representation of what it's like to, you know, be in a sort of touring punk band. I mean, it was, you know, done in a sort of horror type, you know, genre. Did you see that film?
I did. I enjoyed it. I liked that movie.
And it's like to have that actually happen and be successful is like, you know, I think people like you and I will watch it and be like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe this is good, because you go into it being like, this is probably going to be terrible, you know?
Right. The director is a good director. He did that movie Blue Rune right before it. So he's, you know, he's solid.
Totally.
I like that picture.
Yeah, yeah. Very incompetent hands. And yeah, Jeremy Saulnier. And like I think the reason he was able to lend so much of credibility to that aspect is the fact that, like, you know, he comes from the same background as, you know, you and I did, as far as, like, you know, whatever, the punk, hardcore, independent music scene. So it's like, yeah, a person that has the context is going to be able to deliver it much better. Like you said, the sort of authenticity behind it.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? Also a love for it. You know, we probably love the music, and I do love working with bands and musicians. I do enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, that's cool. Cause I mean, I'm sure it just fills fills the room with a certain energy that is tough to capture. You know, if you are looking at it from, you know, like I'm just hiring you to do a job, you know, everyone's kind of creatively contributing in ways that, you know, might not happen in other environments.
And also, you know, I'm not a musician and I really can't play any instruments. I can't sing. I can't do any of that. But I am really into music, and that the process fascinates me, and just the whole everything around it fascinates me. It's interesting to me. So I get into that sort of nitty gritty, and that's interesting to me. And I like to kind of show what's going on.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. So reflecting on your experience at, you know, USC Film School, which is of course, you know, a very, you know, the reputation precedes itself, as far as, you know, just the opportunities that it creates, not from a relationship standpoint, but, you know, learning the technical aspects of like, this is what you need to do in order to like capture this on film and all of the technical aspects of it. You know, and then I'm not going to hash the debate of like, oh, is film school worth it? Because it's like, it's such a stupid conversation in my opinion, because it's like, well, for some people it is. And for some people it isn't. Like there's no definitive answer.
Totally.
Would you say, I guess, kind of the most valuable thing that you got out of it was just the fact that it gave you sort of that foundational aspect of like, this is how I capture my vision. And now I have a vocabulary in which to describe how to actually capture it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm also very much, you know, kind of a purist in a sense where I think it's important to know the basics when you're kind of going into a film, and then, you know, you know the basics of how to put together a classic movie, and then you can go in and do whatever the hell you want. But as long as you kind of know those basics and kind of the rules that you want to break. So I think it's important to know the basics. And I think that's what that film school, you know, education gave me. And yeah, again, I mentioned this, but just the opportunity to make films, I guess you can do that on your own and then I post it on YouTube or whatever, but you make films and you have your peers to sort of watch it and tell you what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, and get a sense of, you know, what kind of filmmaker you are.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Having that sort of intense experience of like, you know, going to school and being so focused on it, and then having people that are part of that same experience is only going to yield, you know, positive results for you to, like you said, have that feedback and have that, you know, everybody's kind of on the same ship, even though people have different visions and different ways that they want to take their talents. But just having that visceral experience, you know, I can only imagine just the excitement that it creates too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's cool. I mean, you know, USC itself has its drawbacks, just in the sense of what kind of school it is and who goes there and what kind of reputation it has. And in a sense, the film school itself was, you know, their mantra was, if you want to make art films, go to art school. So you kind of had to work against that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'm sure. Yeah. If you have a, you know, differing vision than what most people kind of approach, with, you know, being, you know, looking at being like, oh, I want to be a, you know, really successful director. And like, you know, people are attaching their artistic vision to the fact that they want to make a lot of money, you know, and sometimes it's like, well, that you know, maybe that shouldn't be the first thought.
Well, and that's, you know, you kind of know what you're getting into when you go to USC. You know, that's what they foster. That's what they've always, that's always been their take on things, which isn't necessarily my take on things.
Sure. Sure. And since you were pursuing, you know, this passion and, you know, clearly, you know, taking it as seriously as you possibly could, were there, I guess, reservations from, you know, like your parents or other peers where they were just like, dude, Michael, like, you know, you have some talent and, you know, you got a good vision or whatever, but like, I'm kind of scared. Like, how are you going to feed yourself? Or was that kind of something?
Yeah, Michael, I've seen your films. What are you thinking? No.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dude, you're not in this to win it, man.
Yeah. No, I think it's very typical of anybody that's going into something like this where your parents are like, hey, have a fallback, you know?
Right.
And, Yeah. So I had that, but I was, I'm pretty lucky in a sense that my folks were very, very supportive and, you know, my family and friends are supportive of what I do. So I was, yeah, lucky in that respect.
That's cool. Yeah. That they, you know, gave you enough, leash to play with, you know, to not just be completely, you know, going against everything, you know, your family being like, no, we're not supporting this. Like, you know, we want you to do something practical, like, you know, learn a trade, learn how to fix a car or something like that.
Right. Right. Yeah. And my folks are like, you know, they're not artists by any stretch of the imagination. They're, you know, very, you know, my dad was, you know, was a salesman, you know, insurance salesman, and my mother was a, you know, housewife and very sort of somewhat middle of the road types. So, it is kind of a scary proposition to have your kid like go out, you know, 3,000 miles away into the film business, which, you know, they let me do.
Right. Exactly. Well, the notion of, you know, everybody traveling to Los Angeles to make it in the biz. It's like, that's such a, you know, an archetype and a common thing that many people encounter across the country and are just like, oh no, my son or daughter can't go out to the, you know, the big city, they'll be swallowed up.
Right. Well, yeah. I would, you know, coming from New York, I don't know if they would necessarily worry about, but you might have to ask them.
Yeah, you know? That's true. That's, well, funny you mentioned that, Michael. No, just kidding. let's bring him on the call right now.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sports books today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
And so then after you went through, you know, USC and then started to, you know, get into the industry side of things, you were doing a lot of writing and producing. You know, I think a lot of people kind of, you know, since the veil has been peeled back a lot more on the industry side of things, you know, the past, whatever, 10 or 15 years where, you know, there's coverage of every single move that gets made, from, you know, a production house doing a movie to, you know, a executive head leaving one, you know, entertainment company to going to another one. But, you know, as you were kind of navigating this world, is it that you would basically just kind of hop project to project? I'm just trying to kind of paint a picture of, like, you know, how an actual person like yourself is able to kind of, you know, navigate through the world.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's a project to project. You sometimes you have agents who are getting you these different gigs. And then you have to, I mean, for me, I was making a living working in television as a producer and as a writer, still do. But knowing that what I was doing at the time wasn't necessarily what I really set out to do. So I started doing these music videos kind of as aside from my day job, which is say writing or producing in television, and started directing music videos because I thought, at some point I'm like, hold the phone, it's like, I might be making money in this field and doing work in this industry that I'm, came out here to work in, but the type of work I'm doing for my day job is not what I really want to be doing. So I decided to just dive in and start making music videos at the time, choosing the perfect time when the music industry was like literally going off a cliff. So what I did was I I think a lot of people probably do this as well, is you start reaching out to bands or bands that you know of, and you say, hey, I'd like to do a music video for you. And they say, okay, cool. And they like, we don't have a budget, but do you? And you're like, oh, well, I put together some money, and then I did a music video. I did a music video for a band called Kill Me Tomorrow, who are on a label called Gold Standard Labs, and they're from San Diego. But I'm in LA, but Zach, who's the main guy in that band, talked about what we wanted to do. And they were putting together a kind of a concept album called The Garbage Man and The Prostitute. And they were doing a few different music videos. So they kind of took a leap of faith. I mean, I think they were a fan of a student film that I did, and I ended up doing a video for them that ended up, on their album. They released it on their album, along with a couple of other music videos, but that kind of is what got me some notice with other bands and other labels, and afforded me to start doing other videos that I didn't have to pay for.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I always like that picture that you painted, where it's like, you were working, in the industry that you had set forth to work in, but it wasn't maybe, satisfying the creative itch. It satisfied the fact that you were making money and making a living, but, you were like, well, there is a really interesting through line in all of the bands that you have worked with, just because, whether or not they were on the same, record label, which obviously they weren't, but like, it was always, you always seem to work with those, very avant-garde, left of center bands, like, tripping into the Justin Pearson universe of, GSL and 31G and all those bands. Like, they were so, not only stylistic, but that had a very, very strong stance musically, ethically. And the fact that you were able to kind of go in there and work with bands in that orbit, that takes a lot of work and effort to be, not only to foster the trust from human to human, but then also being able to execute on a vision that is, not typical.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I don't think I'd ever met Zach from Kill Me Tomorrow when we started talking, but we did have similar tastes in a sense in novels and film, and we were able to sort of meld those together. And I think I've also mentioned this, but I really do enjoy collaborating with musicians on music videos. So with Zach in particular, it was a concept album, and they gave me this song called Xerox My Hand, and I kind of took the ball and ran with it. But in keeping in mind that I knew what sort of influences he was interested in, which were similar to influences that I had, where it was like Philip K. Dick and J.G. Ballard. We had a like-mindedness, even though we had never met in person. Obviously, we did subsequently. And then moving through that, I think it's like, okay, some people were into Kill Me Tomorrow, or they dug that type of a video. So if you like that, there's a certain like-mindedness, but also it took me out of my comfort zone to a certain degree. Like, for instance, Cursive was a band that I listened to and I was into, but there were a couple other bands that I worked with that were, not necessarily stuff that I would, I was familiar with or that I picked up, but then I was enjoyed working with them and was able to do cool stuff with them. Like, I mean, I did two music videos for a band called The Human Abstract. You're familiar with them, right? Did you work with them?
No. I just knew they existed in my world, but they were on a different label. But yeah, I mean, totally just like really, you know, out there sort of artistic metal.
True. Yes. So I guess, maybe the common bond is there's some sort of out there artistic side to the music. But yeah, we did two music videos that were just crazy big concepts and really cool stuff. So yeah, that was a lot of them.
Yeah, for sure. No, that makes sense. And that, you know, when you are, you know, doing like from the, you know, the professional side of things, not like the, you know, the music video, pursuing your passion stuff, you know, as you were working as a producer and a writer, you know, what sort of stuff were you working on? Were you just working on like, were you working on like soap operas? Were you working on like network TV?
I wrote on some sitcoms. I produced some reality TV for a while. That kind of stuff.
Got it. And so it's just it spread across all, different a variety of different voices and disciplines. Where it was like, oh, okay, now I'm going to be working on this thing that I've never done before, but I can kind of figure it out.
Right. And then say with reality, you know, one job leads to another. And again, they, you know, well-paid stuff and, you know, certainly, you know, enjoyable in terms of just doing the work and trying to, you know, trying to make the best out of what you're given and, you know, learning a lot too, and meeting some really good people. For instance, a lot of, you know, the people that I brought onto this film, say as editors, were people I've met in television. And I think, you know, this film is a good step for them. And then some of them have gone on to, you know, bigger things and better things. For instance, my producer, my partner on this, a guy named Josh Crockett, who I, you know, we met working on a, you know, a television clip show, and I brought him on to it. And now there's this movie Tag, I think, that's coming out today, and he's the editor on that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And he also is, he's a director himself. He, since my film, he directed a sort of a micro budget film that's going to be released on, VOD or something coming out pretty soon.
Yeah, no, it's really cool because I think the, you know, another kind of commonality between, you know, basically entertainment industries in general is, you know, fostering that collaborative nature of like working with people you trust and then finding those relationships and keeping those relationships, you know, and not like keeping them, you know, from a selfish transactional standpoint, but being like, no, I really respect the work that this person does. And like, I would like to figure out a way to work with them more in the future. Cause, you know, no man is an island when it comes to executing your artistic vision. And if you are, like, you're, you know, an auteur, as they say, but it's cool. It's cool that you can do that because the same thing exists, obviously, with bands playing with one another. You know, they just want to play with their friends' bands and people they trust and go out on the road with them and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, again, you develop a common bond. I mean, I think Josh is someone who, you work together in the capacity of saying working on a TV show, and you develop a rapport. But you know, you see there's a talent there, so you start, you know, hiring them or getting them to work on. I mean, he cut a bunch of music videos that I did as well. And then, you know, I think anybody working in television or whether they're working in reality, I don't think anybody, well, maybe that's not necessarily true, but I would say most people don't want to be doing what they're doing. You know, they want bigger and better, and they want to work in film, and they want to work on, like, you know, Breaking Bad or, you know, sort of a top quality television show. So yeah, everybody's looking for a step up, and everybody's looking to do creative stuff.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's very hard to be able to, I guess, kind of hit that sweet spot of marrying exactly what it is you want to work on. And then, you know, having that thing also be, you know, your ultimate paycheck or whatever. It's like, you know, there's different variations of that, and you can still, you know, be successful, even though one of those things may not be like 100% satisfied. It's like, oh yeah, you can still be happy with that.
Yeah, no, I, look, you know, I think it's everybody's goal is to be doing something that they absolutely love and they're passionate about and to make a living at it. If you're able to do that, then you're way ahead of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And so kind of, focusing more on the,
I was going to say, the interview we did, with Thurston Moore, I mean, he was talking about musicians and he said, if you can make a living, like a living at bass level and playing in a band, then, you've won, you've succeeded. If you can play in a band and not have a day job, then you've won the game. So,
right. No, it's a very, very valid point. So kind of turning the focus on, the Icarus Line Must Die. I found it when that came across my, inbox, and I was just like, oh wow. Like I hadn't reckoned with that band, in my head for quite some time. And it was just one of those things. I was instantly intrigued just because, I mean, I think anybody that existed in the early aughts within independent music, was aware of the band either by reputation alone or their connection to Buddy Head. Like, they clearly, elicited a reaction, and then, watching the film, it was one of those things where I was taken by the fact that you were, it's this mix of, narrative fiction and then also a lot of truth that is, sort of the documentary style of, how you were portraying certain aspects of the film. But and then also obviously using the actual, it's not like you were hiring an actor to play Joe in the band or anything like that. And I think because of that, it kind of just feels like everyone I'm sure will compare, this film to, something. It's like, oh yeah, this is very, Jim Jarmusch-esque. And it felt real, like you were talking about earlier, the sort of authentic nature of it. As you were kind of building this thing up with Joe in your head and kind of working collaboratively with it, was that basically kind of the Bible in which you approached every decision towards the film on?
The Bible meaning what would Jarmusch do?
No, just the authenticness of it. The fact that we're just trying to capture this.
Well, I mean, certainly that what I was trying to do was make a movie that, I mean, I wanted to make a movie at all costs, but, and I've written many feature scripts and I know they take a long time. It takes me a long time to write a feature, used to maybe can knock out two in a year, but maybe takes me 6 months to write a script or so. But I wanted to make a movie now. And I thought, well, how do we do that? And, I thought, well, perhaps what we can do is we can, follow the sort of micro budget kind of model, almost like Curb the Enthusiasm.
Sure.
The way they shoot things is they kind of devise this very detailed outline, and then they and they have great great actors and they're able to improv it. But I thought, well, why don't we use that model for this, sort of like Curb the Enthusiasm, but not a comedy. And it's funny, Pearl Charles is in the picture and she's a musician and I was describing that to her. And because we're in Hollywood, she's like, oh, it's funny that you mentioned Curb the Enthusiasm because, my father happens to, have directed many of those. I'm like, really? I had no clue. Yeah. Larry Charles is my dad. And I'm like, oh my God, I think he directed the Borat movie and he's done a lot of big things. So that's the idea was, how could I do immediately? And I've always loved those movies from the late 70s, early 80s, that no wave era of filmmaking, that very sort of punk rock school of filmmaking that Jim Jarmusch came out of. There's a director, Amos Poe. There's also a movie called Blank Generation that's very much of that kind of CBGB's make movies on the street, cast people artists, filmmakers, musicians in these roles. They had a real raw vibe to them and a very authentic feel. And I thought, well, if I'm going into this film, or the idea of making a movie, this was a great world to explore in LA, sort of transpose that New York vibe into the LA scene. And both Joe and I, you know, we have a lot of contacts in the LA music scene, and I thought maybe we can pool those together and make a rock and roll movie, because I love that, and I love that sort of vibe, but I don't feel like I've seen a movie like this or a movie that utilized punk recently. You know, I love Repo Man. Repo Man's one of my favorite pictures. And but, you know, that was a long time ago that movie came out, and they're very few and far between. There's a Green Room, but Green Room's more of a thriller, you know.
Yeah, that's totally.
It comes out of the rock and roll world, but it's not, you're not watching performance and just kind of getting off on seeing, you know, great performance on screen. So that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I think that's what, you know, I mean, even though I live in Orange County, I've existed in, you know, Los Angeles for a long time. And it really felt it felt reflective over where these people and these bands, like, you know, you're not pulling any, not like you needed to pull any punches, but it's just like, yes, like, of course you're going to have the echo in there. And of course you're going to have all of these places where it's just like, in my head, I would never think about it in those terms to like actually execute the vision of, you know, getting something on film. But it's just like, oh yeah, of course, if you're going to be doing, you know, a film based around the Icarus Line, like, and it's set in, you know, 2018 as opposed to, you know, 2002, like, of course they'd play the echo. And like all of those steps, it just felt like, oh yeah, this was done right, you know, like, which is what you were trying to accomplish.
Yeah, well, I mean, we shot a big performance of the Icarus Line at the Echoplex. I mean, it was an actual real performance that they did there. So it was a natural, but I also wanted to have, the film is very much also a Highland Park film, but I wanted to give a sense of our scene, you know, which encompasses Highland Park and Echo Park to a big degree. So it was important to me to have these landmarks in a sense in the picture. I mean, Joe and Charlotte, his wife, you know, are eating at Burrito King, which is on the corner of Alvarado and Sunset. And that just always just strikes me as like, yeah, you go to Burrito King after a show, you know, and that's, I wanted to have these places that are very much part of this scene and this world that we're in, to give that sense to people who maybe aren't from LA and don't know it. I wanted to have, you know, every location was important like that.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Cause it's you know, the whole film is a snapshot of a journey. And so having all of those beats, you know, from moving from one scene to another, in a way, it's like if you experience it and you live in this world, like, you could almost, you know, close your eyes and kind of like, you know, write it instinctually. You know, you could be like, oh yes, of course, like you said, you know, after a show, you'd be going to the, you know, one of two places, and most likely it would be, you know, Burrito King. And then, you know, the way that a studio would look, you kind of close your eyes and envision it, you know. But then for people that maybe only have kind of a topical knowledge of this stuff, they can see a side that doesn't, like you said, you know, previously, it doesn't get, you know, represented, where it's like, I haven't seen a film like that, that kind of documents not only a band and a person's journey, but then kind of the, how this scene sort of operates and the, you know, the proverbial players within it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and I think it's with anything that I do, and it's a fun thing to do, is kind of creating a world and creating a world for people maybe who aren't familiar with it and haven't seen this world before. And I think, again, you know, working on a limited budget, we are able to do that, even given that we had a limited budget, we're able to do that. So that's cool. You know, it's all these things that you're able to do, even though if you don't have a budget, you're able to show people something they haven't seen before, which, I, you know, that's a goal.
Yeah, absolutely. The last thing I want to hit on was the, you know, the fact that the, kind of what I was saying before, where it's like, you know, the movie is, factually based in regards to, you know, these are actual experiences that, you know, Joe and the band have had, whether it's, you know, signing to a major label and, you know, the ups and downs of what that, happens when you're still trying to, you know, do a band when, you know, your quote unquote arguable commercial peak was, you know, 10 years ago. And that, but then, you know, it's obviously hung around a, you know, loose narrative in regards to, you know, what could potentially be happening if this were, you know, set in a fictionalized-ish story. Why did you want to kind of root, have that sort of balance of like rooted in reality? Because, I mean, you know, clearly you could have just taken the Icarus Line as a band and kind of, you know, done a million weird things with it that weren't based in truth. How come you kind of wanted to, you know, sort of mesh those two worlds together?
Well, it was two things. One, I had this idea that I wanted to make this a no wave movie in Los Angeles. And I thought Joe was a very compelling figure to focus and center the music, the movie upon. And then his story at the time we started making the movie was really interesting to me. He's, you know, 36 years old. It was about to be 36 years old. He was about to get married. He still had the Icarus Line. He was about to release this record. And it's an interesting time in someone's life, you know, as a musician who's, you know, had some success, had some acclaim, and, you know, fast forward 15 years later and you're still doing it. And I think that's very much relatable to me, to I think a lot of other musicians and people who just consider themselves, you know, creative people, kind of to keep the flame going. But at the same time, you're growing up, you're becoming an adult, you're no longer a kid, you're no longer, you know, spray painting, you know, sucking dicks on the Strokes bus, tour bus, you know.
Right.
You know, you're now, you know, you have a house, you know, you have to pay a mortgage, and it's a scary time. And how do you deal with that? So that's what I thought was interesting. That's kind of why I chose this path. And everything in it is very true to Joe's life. And the scenes are very, I mean, they're culled from his experiences.
Yeah. Oh no, it's cool. And I think that it works on both levels. Like one, if you are familiar with the you know, journey of the Icarus Line, and then it works on the other side. If you're just like, no, I have no idea, you know, what this band is, but like you can see the kernels of truth that be like, oh yeah, I could see why that would feel that way or why that would look that way. And yeah, I just think it's cool. So basically I'm trying to tell you, you did a good job, Michael.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, of course. Well, dude, thank you so much for letting me walk you through a bunch of different things in regards to the you know, combo of music and film, because I think that some people might not automatically put those two together, but I always have. So I appreciate you walking me through that.
Absolutely. I thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Okay, that was Michael Grodner, the director of The Icarus Line Must Die. And yeah, I feel like a true journalist where I'm like, you know, doing my appropriate plugs for the films and stuff and saying the right title as opposed to just being like, oh, whatever, I'm having a person on. But anyways, thank you very much, Michael, for coming on the show. And I hope you enjoyed that conversation, because I think many of you that get attracted to independent subculture also have a large love of movies. And I know myself, I definitely fall into that category. So it was nice to nerd out about music and film as well. So what do I have next week? I have Jason Gleason from Further Seems Forever, and where actually I met him. He played in a band called Action Reaction, and he also played in a ton of other bands. I did a little Facebook lurking on him, and I messaged him and I was like, Jason, I know you don't do much of these because press is kind of weird for you. Would you be interested in this? And he was stoked to do it. So next week's conversation is, I know it sounds like I say it every week where it's, oh, it's incredible, it's awesome. But this one is really a treat. So you better make sure that you are subscribed. And if you're not, then you're dumb. Okay. Well, not, no, that's mean. You're not dumb, but you should listen to next week's episode. So that's what I got for you. And yeah, hopefully you're having a great summer. Until next week, be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.